Hey everybody, I'm Robert.
And I'm Chris.
And we are the Film Flamers.
That's right. And we're bringing you our regular Shooting the Flames episode where we discuss all of your comments, questions, and bring you all of the horror news and trailers, all for just $0.
That's right. It's a veritable buffet of entertainment.
Right.
That's right. And we can proudly say now that our review drought has ended.
Oh my gosh, it's been like 6 months.
That's right.
Has it been that long?
A review rain dance, and it started to fall.
Yeah.
So we got a review from Midsummer Moki.
Who the hell is that?
Oh no. But well, Moki's a fraggle. They said, Robert and Chris are amazing at reviewing and probing horror movies. Even hard to understand movies are wrapped up in a pretty and enjoyable package. These guys are so insightful and see things I completely miss with remarkable specificity. I see what you did there. The Shooting the Flames episodes can't be beat. Carvana Heist, Muppets, and End of Year Outtakes. Hilarious. This podcast has been putting out episodes for about 5 satisfying years and has good bones. I'm trying to go back and bang out all the past episodes because these guys leave me thirsty for more. Each segment thrusts the audience into really engaging intercourse on Insta and Facebook. If more people gave this a fair stroke, mayhaps it could be thrust into the top tier of movie podcasts. I'll be coming back for more. BRB, gonna buy some Film Flamers merch, Boucheron.
I forgot about our Carvana heist discussion.
I'm just gonna shake it. And by God, I wish I had never said Boucheron.
I feel like there's some innuendo in that review.
I feel that way too.
Probing.
I feel like that innuendo was thrust into our faces.
Let me get you a towel.
You have something on you.
Well, we gave that review a fair stroke.
Thank you for the review, Midsummer Moki. And thank you for ending our drought. As always, we need more of these. So head over to Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or really anywhere that you can rate us and leave us a review. And we're going to read that on the next Shooting the Flames. Thrust it our way.
We've got a lot of comments to get through, and Glazed Donut is making us work hard because she's going back to the beginning times, the before times.
The before times?
Yes.
She's gone BC?
She's gone before COVID.
Before COVID. She did! Oh my God, you're right.
It is BC, and it is Anna and the Apocalypse is what she had to talk about, which was a hot take that we did pretty early on.
Yeah.
And was that early? Was that like 2018?
Yeah, like, that was like around Christmas? First year episode, maybe?
Back when we did hot takes. Back when we had the time to watch movies.
Actually, you know what? Side comment before we get to Glazed Donut. I have been thinking about our hot takes episodes ever since we did our Up in Flames episode this year, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, we're always at this mad dash now to watch all these like recent horror movies. And I was just like, how come we were never doing that in the past? And it's because we had hot takes episodes every single month where we forced ourselves to go watch something new.
We did.
It wasn't always great.
No.
You know? But I kind of miss it. I kind of like to pepper some hot takes in every once
in
a
while. And it forced us to leave the house.
We went to the theater a lot. Sometimes not together. We would go see the same movie, but separately.
Yeah.
But don't you just miss it just a little bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Maybe in 2024 we have a smattering.
Maybe baby steps. Maybe like biannually. Maybe the biannual. the biannual hot take.
Because now we are AC after COVID, and I have gotten used to watching things at home. So.
Except like every fucking trailer today is a theatrical release.
Yeah, and it looks really good.
Yeah,
you know. So
I think that might be the first time that's ever happened since COVID.
Yeah. AC.
Oh, it's officially over, guys.
It's ended. The pandemic is over.
Every trailer that we have is now theatrical.
And everyone's fine, right? I know people who got COVID and they were just like, oh, I have COVID again. And I'm like, I still deep down am like, oh, and they're just like, oh, it's all had at this point. Like, this is my 17th time to have COVID. And I was like, oh my God. Why is no one shocked anymore? Anywho, what do you guys don't have to say about Anna the Apocalypse?
Great segue. Glazed Donut over on Patreon said, never heard of this film until last month, and it was a film. The film had a lot going on. A Christmas horror musical sounds like something a high school student would come up with for theater class. It was so hard to focus on one aspect of the film, but by the end of I kind of lost interest. Same. On a good note, midway through, I decided to finally watch Shaun of the Dead, and I actually really liked it.
Good.
Didn't we just talk about this on Patreon?
Shaun of the Dead?
Where you're halfway through a movie and it makes you want to watch a different one.
Yes, that's right. on our Patreon episode for Valentine, I was just like, halfway through Valentine, I wanted to watch Urban Legend.
Shaun of the Dead's great.
It was great. I'm glad that you made me watch that movie finally. You know what's not great? Anna the Apocalypse.
Or Valentine,
for that matter. But my God, Glazed Donut, I completely agree with you. I really wanted to see Anna the Apocalypse. I was just great. Like, zombies, Christmas horror, musical. And then we got that.
Yeah.
It was something.
Well, the donut continues by going back to our top 10 horror movie scores, which might have been even earlier. I'm not sure.
I can't remember. But on Patreon, she said, such a great episode. This is going to be all over the place. But Hellraiser was the first horror film where I actually noticed and appreciated a score. And I got a little teary-eyed when you played the score for Poltergeist. Although I was extremely happy that you both had Bernard Herrmann's score for Psycho as number one. It's so beautiful that sometimes I will just watch a random orchestra on YouTube perform it. I feel like Herrmann's score perfectly describes the tone of Psycho and still wonder why it wasn't nominated for an Oscar. This episode was 5 years ago, ! And I seriously wonder or hope that there will be an updated list or at least a part. Duh.
Yeah, and I think we actually put 20 scores in there or something because it was each of ours.
Mm-hmm. Did we each have Psycho as number one?
Yeah, I think we had some that were the same. And so we only had to play things once, but we really do. We've been talking about doing a second.
Yeah, because there's other ones we want
to talk about.
More
movies have come out that have had great soundtracks, mm-hmm. and then others that were close runner-ups. So it's if I was just going to go blindly list everything out, it might be a completely different list, and I'll just cross out the ones that I've already listed in this top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think we could have a combined one so we can have a more cohesive list. But
yeah, I mean, I would love to do another one of that. I would love to do another creepy love songs too.
Honestly, one of my favorite things to do in this podcast when I edit, because I don't look forward to editing really anymore. Except if I have a really a lot of cool music to do. It Follows was great for me because I really loved to do the music. And so you'll notice a lot of my picks for deep dives are something by Jerry Goldsmith or one of the greats, Ennio Morricone, where I really, really enjoy doing the score for.
Well, it's fun to add that into the episode.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I feel like we would probably do another top 10 of that. And I agree with you. I think that Psycho is an amazing piece of music. The Psycho suite that you would hear played is, it flows really well. And it also brings a tear to my eye.
I think Vertigo was a special mention for me, or maybe it was number two or something for me. I don't know.
Yeah. I think you had two Bernard Herrmanns on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vertigo is also a good score.
Oh.
So stay tuned, Glazed Donut. We may have another one.
For Dolores Claiborne, Sean over on Patreon said, when you guys mentioned Shawshank and how many of King's stories are connected, I was reminded that he wrote this at around the same time as Gerald's Game. Both women in the stories have visions of each other at some point. It didn't really add much to either story, but it's a fun wee little Easter egg. I could swear to God we had an extended conversation about this.
We did. We talked about it for sure.
Was it in the Dolores Claiborne episode or was it?
Yeah, it was in the Dolores Claiborne episode. We talked about, I don't know that it was an extended conversation, but we did talk about how in the novel of Dolores Claiborne, she has a vision of the character from Gerald's Game and vice versa. And that Mike Flanagan sort of has that vision in his film version of Gerald's Game.
Did we talk about that in Misery then instead? I don't know. Wondering how Sean missed it.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it was that extended. I think it was a really quick conversation, actually.
I wonder if it's one of those things where you're driving to work and you listen to half an episode and then you go make a comment and then you listen to the other half.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But Sean, we did talk about that at some point, because that's one of my favorite things about both of these novels is that they're connected in that kind of way. And that's the only way they are connected. And I love when Stephen King does shit like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anthony over on Patreon said, this is the book I recommend doing on audiobook. Francis Sternhagen's reading of it adds so much to the story.
We also mentioned that, right? That that was a fun fact that mm-hmm. Francis Sternhagen, of course, starring as the older lady.
The sheriff's wife.
Sheriff's wife from Misery.
Yep.
Reads Dolores Claiborne.
So After we recorded that episode, I went onto Spotify and I favorited that audiobook so I could listen to it because I have to. And I haven't read Dolores Claiborne in a long time, so that's going to be a fun listen.
From our Up in Flames 2023 review episode for the year, Nicole over on Patreon said, really got a kick out of The Last View, and my kids already knew what it was because they are not olds, and I am olds. So naturally, we're all watching it together now. Does part one somehow fit with the closing scene of part three? Something about the end scene of part three seems to match the appearance of part one. I need to rewatch it, but the kids keep yelling back rooms at me when I try talking through it. I'll report back after I test my theory. Also, rip Valley View Mall. That puppet show really took me back. Woo. Yeah. So Valley View, like there's all this interesting, really cool stuff. There's like YouTube videos about the oldest view now. Yeah. It's not called The Last View. I think she went back and corrected herself later. And yeah, part one is basically, it's supposed to be a flashback to the original man that the puppet is based on, which is of course one of the, you know, like the founders or founding, you know, fathers of Dallas or the Dallas area, of what they did in that puppet show parade or whatever it was. So this is a giant fucking puppet. And so at the end, it kind of bookends with that. And so also Valley View Mall, like there's so many different connections that this kid did to actually create this thing, you know, to justify it, you know, like the other Valley View Mall that has a sister mall over in Roanoke, Virginia, which of course is where the whole colony fucking disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's like all these weird connections within it. And like, if you like stop frame stuff, there's some interesting things. And there's a whole video that I can probably link in the show notes to this, where it talks about the history of Valley View Mall, as well as the history of that character itself and how it ties into that video. And it's super fucking interesting. So anyway,
I really wish, I'm glad that people are watching this actually, because we're about to have another comment from another patron about it. But I'm so glad people are watching this, and I really wish that they would release this on something other than YouTube at some point, you know, just so more people would watch it maybe. Or YouTube's fairly popular, so I mean, I don't know.
They is just this kid. He's like 19.
Oh my God, it's just amazing to me.
You know? So yeah, speaking of which, go ahead.
So Nikki over on Patreon said, okay, we watched The Oldest View. My heart was pounding through the whole thing, but the ending annoyed me. I need a movie to have a great ending for it to be a great movie. I'll go back and listen to your thoughts on it again, and maybe I'll watch the first two episodes too.
Yeah, so she actually went back and did. Okay. And she's like, yeah, the brunt of the movie is like in the third episode, which is true.
Yeah.
But there's a big like... when he's first going down the stairs and everything else is in episode two.
I feel like you need episode two.
So I feel like you need that anticipation to build up to the ending and appreciate it more. Mm-hmm. So I hate that you didn't watch the second one first. I would think that you would have enjoyed the ending better, but I don't know. A lot of people don't like, you know, wet Grinch salad endings. Not that this has one, no spoilers. What is interesting is if you watch it again and you see other details, you know, like if you actually like freeze frame in the right place, during the ending, you can actually see certain interesting things like in the background, and like the character falls at some point.
Right.
And you actually see before he falls that he's on the floor already, like as he's crawling up in the rafters and stuff.
See, this like, is
there's
why,
all these really cool details in this fucking thing.
This is why this movie is so good. And I like I've already seen it like three or four times now, and I just cannot get enough of it. Like, I will not stop recommending this movie. And anytime I recommend it, I'll be like, let's just watch it together. You know what I mean? So just like Nicole's kids, you know, like, come on. I love it. And I cannot wait to see what he does next. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently it's going to be a James Wan-backed Backrooms movie.
I'm ready.
And that, of course, that's why her kids were yelling back rooms, because that's, you know, famous with the kiddos. It's this whole creepypasta thing, you know.
Didn't he already do a back rooms kind of thing?
Well, even, yes, he did. He popularized it on YouTube. Of course, it was already popular, like on, you know, Reddit and stuff like that, and creepypastas and stuff like that. But and other people had kind of like visualized it, and then he made it into an actual narrative and videos with, you know, his specialty. And so he actually is very skilled at telling stories with, you know, visual storytelling and almost no dialogue. And so, you know, obviously he is a talent. So
we'll just see how the public at large takes something like that too. Mm-hmm. It seems like a very niche kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. David Raymond Clark over on Spotify said 2023 was beige. Hilarity. Thanks a million, Flamers. Deke.
Deke. It was beige. My God, I've already forgotten half the movies I saw in 2023. Call Me Lestat sent us an email and he said Skinamarink is not a film. It's avocado toast for people who won't eat guacamole.
I think we got another golden nugget from him last episode about Skinamarink too.
So that's right.
Maybe every month he'll give us a new a new nugget of truth about Skinamarink.
I'm just glad there are other people who are not like licking its butt. You know, like,
no, and no one's commented to us about it either. No one's, it's not like we're like yucking anyone's yum, I guess, on this podcast.
Or maybe we just shamed them enough to not say anything like polite about it.
Yeah, because I mean, other people, it could have spoken to them, you know, obviously, you know,
like, one to each their own.
Yeah, to each their own, beauty by the holder, blah blah blah, artist aesthetic, blah blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not for us though. I don't like guacamole or avocado toast, so I think Skinamarink is a fair, like, that's a good descriptor for that movie. Mm. Avocado's nasty. From our Flamers flashback episode on The Running Man over on Patreon, Battle Burrito said on Patreon, I would have been a lifelong fan of this movie if this hadn't been my first watch. It's so casually bonkers that I can't tell if the bad parts of the movie were intentional or not. Makes this a perfect group watch. It's hard to overstate how much I enjoyed this and that it's easily one of my top five fun 80s watches of all time now.
I had a blast watching this movie.
It really was a fun watch.
And I know that you were shocked by that, but it's not a good movie. But
no, it's
so
not.
Fun, you know, and it's so bonkers and it knows it's so fun when the movie knows how bonkers it is and is like leaning into it. With the script and everything else. And it's Arnold Schwarzenegger is great when things go bonkers. He leans into it too, you know? And so it's a really great group watch. So if anyone hasn't listened to our episode on The Running Man, do so. Watch it with a group of friends or your family even. It's great.
Because I was flabbergasted when that movie ended and the two of y'all were like, oh my God, that was so great. And I was just like, what? Like, I really thought by the end of that, y'all would have been like, this is a piece of shit.
It is a piece of shit.
You know, but.
But it's a good piece of shit.
I mean, I would watch it again right now, actually.
I would. So,
The Running Man's amazing.
It's fun. It's entertaining. The whole way through. From our Shooting the Flames episode back in February last month, Anthony over on Patreon said, I'm really looking forward to Abigail now that I've watched the trailer. If you guys hadn't watched it yet, you should consider checking it out. Oh, checking out The Sacrifice Game on Shudder. The name kept me from watching it a few times because I'm starting to see a handful of titles that with that naming structure, like The Friendship Game. But I finally gave it a watch yesterday, and I think if you're excited about Abigail, it would be a fun appetizer while you're waiting for the main course. All right. The Sacrifice Game.
I think it's a Christmas movie, too.
Hmm.
Like, it was released on Shudder toward the end of the year, and I was like, it got some like good buzz and kind of good reviews. And I was like, maybe I need to add this to my 2023 list before we record Shooting the Flame or before we record Up in Flames. But the more I was watching those 2023 horror movies, the more like I was just done with it. And I was like, I can't watch any more like just mediocre films. But I will take that recommendation because it was really close to being on my list.
Doesn't have the highest Letterboxd rating, but hey, it does look like Christmas horror, and we're kind of fresh out of those a little bit.
Yeah.
So
We always need more, and I love them. Sorry, Anthony. Mm-hmm. Adding it to my watch list again. If you're wrong, I'll come for you. Battle Burrito over on Patreon said, I think the recent Nazi zombie zeitgeist was started with Call of Duty World at War back in the halcyon days of 2008.
Halcyon. 2008 was not halcyon. It was, for those of us in the job market, okay?
It was not a good time for anybody. But okay, it was a separate PvE game mode that was so popular it turned all subsequent WW2 titles into Nazi zombie vehicles.
Actually, Dead Snow was the first one I remember.
I remember that. It's the only Nazi zombie movie that I know of. And it would make sense that if the zeitgeist, the Nazi zombie zeitgeist was from a video game, I would have probably not known that this zeitgeist existed.
And also, I would actually like kind of hard disagree. Maybe the new zeitgeist was for that, or like breathed new life into it, ironically. But I would argue that Wolfenstein, you know, from id Software here in Dallas, actually created Wolfenstein, Wolfenstein 2, all that stuff.
There were zombies in Wolfenstein?
In the 90s and Castle Wolfenstein, and they have zombies and, yeah, it's supernatural.
I didn't know that.
Zombies and like vampire demon things and
first-person shooter game. I don't know.
Yeah, it's all ties into the Nazi like supernatural bullshit. You know? Mm-hmm. So,
although I really like an excuse to say the word Halcyon.
Halcyon. Jessica over on Patreon said, "Hey, Tired Queens, it's been a minute since saying hi to you, but I've been listening to every episode. So much happening at work right now, I haven't even had time to stop and think about what to write about, but I will tell you, all this listening has helped me discover my new fave, Robert mispronouncing literally the most basic bitch of words." She went back and said that that was a typo, that it auto-corrected for basic, basic words to basic bitch. But I like basic bitch.
the most basic bitch of words. My God, Jessica.
Boucheron. What was it?
Specificity. The specificity of this comment makes me laugh. You're right. Okay, so this is something that, this happens to me just in general. I just say things that are not right. My brain works faster than my mouth does, and so I'm just like saying things like fucking Boucheron. So
yeah,
basic bitch of words. Oh, I like you, Jessica. From our deep dive into Possession, Exile Texan over on Patreon said, "For some reason, Robert was giving off possible supervillain vibes to me."
Yeah, I don't know what that's about.
I don't either. Was I?
I don't know.
I didn't get that from that
episode. What did you say?
I don't know. Like taking over the world? I will. I commented back on Patreon and said I am a supervillain.
Okay.
I just setting the record straight.
And you know what? It's interesting. The Exile Texan had reached out earlier and said that sometimes he uses our podcast to fall asleep to.
Excuse me.
We just can't have that happening. So what I'm going to need all of our listeners to do right now is turn down their volume because it's about to get very, very loud. Wakey, wakey, Sam. Hope that helped.
Hope you enjoyed sleeping through those dulcet tones.
How dare you sleep during our podcast?
We are entertaining.
Why did that sound like a question?
I know. But
we are entertaining.
Because I can't pronounce words and I say things like fucking Catherine O'Hara. I can't help myself.
It's starting to sound like a cry for help.
Hold on.
It's amazing.
There. Now we're entertaining. Boucheron.
McKenna over on Patreon said, "Just become a patron again after not listening for a majority of the last year when dealing with separating with my now ex-husband. I cannot explain how amazing it is to me that the first new episode after resubscribing and divorce is Possession. I'm so glad you covered this film. I wish you liked it as much as I do, but I love listening to your opinions on it. Thank you. Thank you for making my day." And I think it is actually going to be one of those because I keep thinking about it. Yeah. I think it's going to be one of those where it's like we're going to like it better on the next watch.
And more. Agree. I mean, I liked it on this watch. You know, I just had some problems with it. But I also have been thinking about this movie quite a bit. And I actually want to watch it again.
I kind of do, too. And now that I've got the shock and disappointment of how Muppety the acting is and everything, and I got that out of the way, and I kind of understand what it is, like a really heightened, surreal, emotionally surreal movie, and I've not really experienced much of those, right? That I think I could enjoy it on a different level now.
Yep, I would agree.
I just needed time to digest it a little bit. We cannot do deep dives where neither of us have watched it first.
Well, we're about to do one this month, so I mean...
Well, fuck it. This will be the last one.
That's like the third one in as many months. So, I mean, I hope everyone gets ready for Cargo, because neither one of us has seen this movie, and we're about to like deep dive it.
Yep.
So, but McKenna, welcome back. And I like this kind of irony, right? And I'm glad that this is the first thing that you got to listen to after resubscribing, so...
I love it when things kind of line up, you know?
That's right. So, I mean, like, for at least one person, this turned out to be a good episode to listen to. And I'm glad that we made your day. So, we are going to watch Possession again at some point, and we will report back to you as to how our feelings may have changed about it. But I hope that you are well. Post-divorce, it's not easy. From our deep dive into It Follows, James over on Patreon said, "I was way too high the first time I watched this, and it fucked me up." LMA.
I can only imagine.
I mean, I don't think... No, you know what? On this rewatch, because I watched it by myself, sitting on my bed, high as fuck, watching It Follows. And I was fucking... terrified watching it. I was just like, oh, the fuck? All those fucking naked old people chasing her? I was just like, I need to take a break. I get it, James. I get it.
Battle Burrito over on Patreon said, it's kind of hard to overstate how much of a game changer this movie was for me. I had only recently begun to appreciate horror, and then It Follows comes out, and I couldn't believe how much I liked it. I love that its main plot works on two levels. Looking back, it looks like It Follows began the zeitgeist that we're living through with horror movies that have to be about something through generous use of allegory, although few movies managed to do it as effectively and gracefully as It Follows. I would say Babadook was up there with that zeitgeist, and, you know, Hereditary a little later on, maybe. But yeah, you know, this was definitely in that big new wave horror that came out in the mid-teens.
Yeah, it really started something special back in those Halcyon days. And if we're going to say Zeitgeist again, we're going to say Halcyon again too. Come on. You couldn't have thrown that in there, Battle Burrito?
Zeitgeist of those Halcyon days.
But yeah, no, totally. I feel like this movie really ushered in a lot of things that we enjoy today and the things that sort of created this podcast, right? Mm-hmm. This last bout of like a wave of horror films really made the Film Flamers what it is and done good things for horror. I'm really sad to see like the cycle end, and it's going to end at some point.
You could say it maybe started like, I'd like to see a book end, you know, maybe we should write a book about this
period cycle, of time,
like 2014 to 2024, like kind of starting around It Follows and ending with Talk to Me, you know,
could
be interesting.
That somewhere. I mean, because that's a message movie too.
I'll write an academic paper and publish it in the Dickensian Proclivity Journal for academic horror bitches.
We'll just show up and give talks and just throw the word allegorical around.
Allegorical.
I know.
It has a proclivity.
The specificity of this allegory of this zeitgeist film from the Halcyon days of 2015.
Indubitably.
I mean, people would line up to hear us talk, right? Call Me Lestat sent us an email, and he says, I agree with your thoughts about Carpenter's influence on It Follows. I often wonder at the low numbers or less than excellent ratings through Rotten Tomatoes. My personal theory, puritanical American sexual hang-ups aside, there are a staggering number of people who are and have been impacted by STIs. It remains my belief that many who have the experience of turning up, let's call it positive, likely balk at the narrative that reminds them of the fears and feelings that they may have in those moments of their lives. Perhaps this is too much for some. Being confronted with a masterful expression of consequences and vulnerability can be challenging. Often, we forget that our past only exists in our present. It can be hard to be reminded of that. Addition. Clearly, the STI component is obvious and superficial, but for many, simple and obvious does not override the preconceptions or shame, fair or not. P.S. The film cuts to the core of terror management, that all of what we do is motivated by building a veil between us and nothingness. From prehistoric cave art to podcasts, it is an effort to forget. Death comes for everyone, and in every case, it is a gross, irredeemable violation of us and our memory and our agency.
I love all of that.
That is so fucking poetic, Lestat. My good God.
God, I'm starting to feel like maybe I thought I was feeling pretty good about my notes and everything and how I worded it. That was so much better. It was like a distillation of a distillation.
That's true.
He TLDR'd my whole thing about It Follows, and I love it.
Right. I think that like this movie clearly could be an allegory for STI, right?
But yeah, he really nutshelled. Sorry. He really nutshelled our conversation about that was one level of it on the surface. And he's saying people can't get past it because of that reason. Like that psychological PTSD of like worrying about it or having it, you know. And then his PS about terror management of everything we do in our life is to distract ourselves from the inevitable end is exactly what we were kind of getting at. It's about death, you know, and loss of innocence and all the stuff that we put in our way to distract ourselves from it.
You know what really sucks, though, is that like if you're doing something to distract yourself from death and sex is the thing that you want to do, but you've had an STI in the past and that makes you a little like PTSD of
it's
sex.
It's the thing that you do to escape.
Right.
It is also the thing that reminds you of it. It's a full closed loop.
Yep. I don't know. I mean.
Thank you, Lestat.
There is a fucking stigma with STIs, though, like from a general public standpoint.
Is there?
There is a smegma with STIs.
Smegma.
I was going to have something
this
profound.
This is magma of the population.
I was going to say something profound, but I'd probably say a basic bitch word fuck up and then like... And then hear about it from Jessica. So Boucheron to all of it.
No. Speaking of Jessica.
Oh.
Yeah, she sent us a DM and she said, thank you for the Green Knight deep dive. I'm going to watch it again after hearing your breakdown. My boyfriend and I watched it a few months ago and I just kind of looked at each other after it was done and said, okay, so that was a movie. Visually gorgeous, but we just felt like it was a ton of that we were missing. Now, that alone is enough to turn the boyfriend off of a movie, so he checked out immediately. It's okay. He's perfectly happy just being pretty and built like the Statue of David, ooh. So I'll allow it. Oh, nice. And that's when I went down the YouTube rabbit hole and to find all I could about the backstory. And before you ask, no, I learned nothing of the story in school. I went to the public school in rural Northern California, and we went as deep as Flowers for Algernon, guys. Love that story too. All this is to say nothing on YouTube truly satisfied my need for the intellectual deep dive like your coverage. So thank you. That's that feels good.
Validation.
Finally, you mentioned an off comment on the last Shooting the Flames about Apple Podcasts being a dying media. To this point, I hear other podcasts these days starting to say now to only rate us on Spotify, but no mention of Apple Podcasts. I get it, but from a user's perspective, Spotify is truly a crime for listening to content and organizing it in the way you want to listen to it. Not to mention, Spotify overshot their load big time after the pandemic, and when they overpaid the Ringer guy to lead up podcasts on Spotify, you got a bunch of shit content to sign on exclusives and buried really good content also into those exclusive bundles, but then dropped them when they underperformed. Well, they underperformed because they couldn't go on any other fucking platforms. So now the only pods they're pushing are the stupid drivel daddy bullshit and Joe Rogan. I can't, guys. I can't. Feel free to delete my rant on Spotify and never release it to the public if it doesn't fit the format. I get it. I just wanted to let you guys know my opinion on that very shitty-ass platform for many reasons that is Spotify. I know that makes me so not hip and cool. The Gen Z era may cancel me, but I'm a proud, jaded, but also strangely optimistic Xenial bitch. Get over it. You go.
Mic drop. I mean, like, really. You hooked me at Statue of David boyfriend and then really let Spotify have it.
Yeah, you love Spotify though, right?
I love Spotify, but I do not listen to podcasts on it.
Oh, interesting.
For those very reasons. I still use Apple Podcasts when I listen to things because I can organize my stuff better.
I like that. I like all the stuff that they did. Like they added like the ratings and they really pushed hard on getting us listeners and everything else. And so they steadily increased as a platform to where they're our major, you know.
Yeah.
Most of our listeners are on Spotify. The problem is, yeah, you cannot find anything and it's kind of annoying and you can't really organize your stuff. It's really all about their curation and not yours. And so I don't really listen to, I got frustrated and I don't listen to Spotify at all anymore.
But so, I love Spotify for music.
A lot of people do. A lot of people swear by it for podcasts. So again, it's like up to the person.
Yeah. I mean, again, to each their own. Right?
I listen to Pocket Casts, which is pretty niche, I guess.
I don't even know what that is. But
I've had it for years. I loved it. It had all these extra features that no one had back in the day. And I paid, it was back when you didn't have to pay a subscription, but like one lump sum. So I have unlimited access to all of their features for a lifetime.
Oh my God.
And now it's all like membership. So
when I first got an iPhone, I really, really fell in love with the podcast app part of it. And I'm sort of like, just, I don't know, loyal to it at this point, right? But literally, I've been listening to podcasts on Apple for all these years that everything is already saved on there, right? And Spotify has too much going on sometimes. Like, I will never stop my Spotify subscription because I really like the way that they curate music for me and how I can curate my music. And it's a big part of my life. But trying to listen to podcasts on there is kind of a chore. Now that they've added audiobooks, like, I'm doubly glad that I still have Spotify because I don't have to have all these other apps. I keep trying to listen to podcasts on Spotify and I just routinely don't like it. So I don't think it's going to last for me. But the thing is that all these apps keep changing. Apple Podcasts went from good to really bad a couple years ago, and now it's starting to get good again with all their updates. And I feel like Spotify will probably make some updates to their platform and make it better. And I feel like the more people who listen to podcasts on there will make some changes in general, just as popular as it gets. Yeah. Right. So I don't know. But you can listen to us wherever you want to, Jessica, as long as you keep these emails coming. Also, I also love Flowers for Algernon.
Yeah.
It was a play, right?
And also a movie.
Mm-hmm. Charlie was the name of that movie. It was good.
Okay.
Kimberly sent us an email and she said, on Labyrinth, colon, who was this teenager in the park in Renaissance garb? That would be me. And unfortunately, I have the pics to prove it.
She did. She gave us a picture. She's so pretty.
Oh my God. I love it. Hi, guys. It's been a hot minute. My life has been incredibly busy and my chronic illness has me very tired. But I'm still here listening when I can and reading the chats in Patreon. I really wanted to see Out of Darkness. It was in the theater for like a day and then it was just gone. I hope it's streaming soon. On a different note, I read an article that said many considered Dark Crystal Jim Henson's magnum opus. I agree. It is absolutely beautiful and one of my favorite movies of all time. So she sent a picture of herself in Renaissance garb, and she said 16 or 17, question mark, mid-90s. I would give my left nut to have that figure again.
Yeah, I think we're 16 or 17, somewhere in the 90s.
We are 16 going on 17. Somewhere in the mid-90s.
Exactly, yes, in the mid-90s. Jim Henson's magnum opus is Dark Crystal.
Yeah, agreed.
Obviously. And I remember watching Avatar and then, you know, circa 2009 or something. And then watching Dark Crystal again after having not seen it since I was like a kid or a teenager. And just seeing everything that I saw in Avatar, essentially, but in physical reality, like actual puppets and like on set and everything. I was like, there's so much production value in this movie. It's just like someone's love all over it, you know? And yeah, it's endlessly watchable.
It has been a hot minute since we heard from you, Kimberly, as well. I was thinking, I was like, the last Shooting the Flames had a serious Kimberly dearth. So I'm glad to hear from you. I hope you're doing well. We also really wanted to see Out of Darkness. And by the time I realized it was playing in the theaters, the only showtime that was available for the most part was like 10:30 at night. So bring it on streaming, please. Keep listening and keep sending us emails and such.
Call me Lestat sent us an email and said, I often hear cans crack. Absolutely delighted to hear, by the way, during episodes. It is obvious you are no teetotalers. May I ask, if it isn't too personal a question, what both of you like to drink? I consider myself an equal opportunist, not just spirits, but in great many things. What's your poison? Also, discussion seltzer? I think I'll have a listening wine. So right now, I am drinking kind of a local cider from Bishop Cider called Crackberry.
And I am a complete basic bitch, complete with mispronunciations, and I am drinking a Truly seltzer.
Yeah, so if you ever hear me go Truly, that's because it's a double entendre.
But when it comes to drinking things, like, I am an equal opportunist and I will drink whatever the hell I want. However, I really enjoy things like moderately priced champagne.
What's your cocktail?
My cocktail of choice?
Yeah.
Well, anything with gin. I like gin. So I drink a lot of like gin and tonics or like a dirty gin martini.
Right. That's what I drink when I go out. Gin and tonics are really easy. And then at home, I like to make myself a nice, fancy old fashioned.
I had an old fashioned at dinner a couple of weeks ago and it was fucking delightful. Right. And
someone was making it. I went to like this Italian place and they were using amaretto as their simple syrup. And yeah. And I never thought of that before. I'm like, okay. So yeah, I'm going to do that as like a little bit. I'm going to start mixing my own little old fashions with that. And I have the proper cherries, you know, and
ooh, Oscar night.
I have craft ice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. I think we got away from that. But yes, that's what we do. And of course, we both like the occasional gummy, although you like the gummy more often than I do, I think.
It's been quite less, considerably less these days, but, I'm also drinking less than I used to.
I'm weird. I like to be stone cold sober when I watch a movie.
Oh, I like to be the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really love a gummy when I'm watching a movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am almost always drinking whenever we record things. It's probably why I say shit like Boucheron, but, yeah, these seltzers though. I mean, like, it's been kind of life-changing for me. That's so fucking stupid. They're so good.
Yeah.
There's so many different flavors. I don't know, I also like beer.
He continues to say, to the point of The Last Shooting of Flames, there was a little discussion on the unreliable narration of Danvers in True Detective Night Country. In season one, the unreliable narration is a significant component part of the script, and the narrative is considerably stronger for it.
Agreed.
I have not seen anything. I finally finished True Detective Night Country. I thought it ended well, despite apparently an uproar online. I thought it ended very well.
Oh, there's an uproar?
Yeah, apparently people were like, or I think the original guy that started True Detective, that's what it was. The original guy that started True Detective was amplifying and retweeting all of the negative comments about it.
Really? That's like fucking a little shitty.
Fucking child.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Calm your ego.
Yep.
So I really want to watch that show, and I was waiting for it to be finished. And now that it's finished, it's all about sitting down and actually doing it, right? But I agree with you. Season one component of that, it was a huge part of that. And I really, really like season one. So also there's been another season greenlit. So apparently it's sticking around HBO.
Yeah, I love those things where it's like, you know, anthology where we get, you know, American Horror Story, and then we get like True Detective. And apparently we're also getting The Terror again.
So. And Ryan Murphy is having yet another horror TV show coming out soon. I forgot what it's called, but that was kind of teased.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. We have some voicemails.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The first one from Nimble Wembley.
Nimble Wembley sent us another voicemail.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert and Chris. This is Nimble Wembley. I was so excited to hear you respond to my questions I had in the last Shooting the Flames episode. For really awesome answers. Anyway, I just recently went to the Beetlejuice musical, which is pretty good. And I was thinking about, man, we had so many horror Saturday morning cartoons, like Beetlejuice and Little Shop of Horrors. And what were there others? Which, I don't know, seemed kind of crazy that we had those for kids. But I was just wondering what you guys think would be a really good horror movie to turn into a Saturday morning cartoon. You know, those things don't even exist anymore. First thing that came to mind for me was Chucky. And ever since Robert, you said Boucheron, all I can think about is Tom Boucheron. And I was just wondering if you guys think would be the best horror character to be the center square on Hollywood Squares. Anyway, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to respond to questions that we have and to put out this really cool podcast. Can't wait to listen to it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Well, thank you for the voicemail. First question, I guess. I almost thought it was reversed. Like, what cartoons in the morning would we want to become horror movies or horror shows? Like, the opposite way. The first thought of Duckula. I was like, could you imagine, like, a Winnie the Pooh, like, Blood and Honey version of Duckula? you know? Or even fucking Little Monsters. That was a thing, like, the mid to late 90s.
Real Monsters?
Real Monsters, yeah.
That would be a totally amazing live-action movie.
Yeah.
What horror movie would I want to be a Saturday morning cartoon? It would have to be transportive. You don't want a static location.
Oh my God. Could you imagine Hellraiser? Like a cute little cartoon pinhead?
Yes. I can imagine that actually. Like running around like a little strawberry shortcake. I feel
it's basically
like
Beetlejuice, just a little bit darker.
Do you remember that cartoon though? The Beetlejuice cartoon?
Yeah. I used to watch it all the time.
There was also a fucking Toxic Avenger cartoon.
Yeah.
It's weird. Mm-hmm. I would think that Freddy Krueger would make a really good Saturday morning cartoon because it's
he's already been
dreams.
Immortalized as a cartoon as Scary Terry on Rick and Morty. It worked out great.
Scary Terry. But I just feel like in every episode, they're going into someone else's dream and there's so much you could do with that, you know, like even like Scooby-Doo style. And it would totally make Freddy like more of a protagonist, you know? And I could totally see that happening.
I wonder if they'd like, I know what you did last summer, but it was like, I know what you did last episode and just kept on. It's like a new person. Every single crime they solve, they create another criminal.
So it's like Scooby-Doo, but I know what you did last episode.
Yeah.
Yes. I can see that. Totally.
You know, it's like somehow they created this other like tragedy that creates another villain every single episode. Like, we couldn't have possibly caused one this time.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love that his questions are about like, which horror movie do you want to cast Muppets in and which horror movie do you want to be a Saturday morning cartoon? I love it.
Oh my God. Put us in a think tank. Pay us money.
What was the second question? Which horror character do you want to see as the center square on Hollywood Squares?
Again, Pinhead.
Pinhead or Freddy Krueger.
To show you.
Freddy Krueger would be fucking funny because he has
prime
quips.
Time, bitch.
That's right. Or someone just silent like Jason who just wouldn't say anything.
That'd be kind of funny.
Circle gets the square.
Yeah.
I don't know. My God. Okay, those are really good questions. Mm-hmm. Keep those coming, Nimble Wimbley.
We have another voicemail, and it's from Ashley.
Play it.
Hey, Chris and Robert. It's Ashley, a.k.a. Fembot, and I just wanted to call in and congratulate you on an amazing cover of It Follows. Great episode. I really enjoyed it and especially love three parts. One, when I believe it was Chris that tells Robert, like, sometimes I hate when you talk. It was really funny. And then two, when you guys talked about the lecture scenes, I love a good horror movie classroom lecture scene. I've seen it in Halloween with Jamie Lee when she notices Michael Myers out in the yard, in Nightmare on Elm Street, which I believe you guys referenced when Nancy falls asleep in class. And of course, in It Follows, I love when those scenes happen. There's something so chilling about them, and I've always loved them. And then third and finally, I just really appreciated Robert's take on what the real point of this movie is, and death, and that it comes for all of us. And it was chilling to hear, and you, like, articulated it so beautifully. So thank you so much. Bye-bye.
So first, I don't remember saying anything about not liking you talk. What?
I think she may be mixing us up because, like, you really led the discussion about death coming for all of us. I think that a lot of my comments were reactionary to that. And so maybe I said to you, I hate it when you talk.
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, you would? You would hold that grudge?
I would hold that grudge. And I would beat you with it. And then she mentions the classroom scene. And it got me thinking about all the other classroom scenes. Of course, you're completely right. And that makes it even more John Carpenter-ish, you know? Mm-hmm. I like that point, and we should have really mentioned that. But I love that it made you think of that because it's exactly what we want to, evoke, right? But I was also thinking of, like, Exorcism of Emily Rose classroom scene. And that really freaked me out when that came out. She looks at someone and just, like, turns into a demon's face. And then she sees demon faces in the clouds and the storm outside. And, like,
so good.
Fucking crazy. I want to deep dive that.
I really love the lecture scene in A Nightmare on Elm Street because it's completely the opposite of It Follows, right? So, like, everything that happens during that lecture in A Nightmare on Elm Street fits the story and what's happening because they're talking about dreams. They're reading from Hamlet. And in this movie, they're reading from something that I really have no idea what it is. It's a literature class that she's in,
Yeah. You know?
And I was like, I can't pinpoint what that is at all. And it seemingly had nothing to do with the movie, but I'm fairly certain that it must at
it
some
does,
point.
It does, it does. And I forgot to kind of go into it because the Dostoevsky stuff was much more important.
Right. The quotes at the end of the movie, right? Which is also a literature quote, you know? But, like, there's something going on in that lecture scene. The thing is, like, with lectures in general in horror movies, it's so very mundane. And it can be very, very monotonous, especially when, like, teachers are speaking. And so it sort of lulls you into this, like, sense of, like, comfort and safety. And every time in these movies, you're not safe. It's when either a villain is, like, popping up for the first time, like in Halloween or in It Follows. Like, really, it's the first time that she notices it outside of that first naked woman, right? Or in A Nightmare on Elm Street, it's, like, the first time that Nancy is really going into her own, like, nightmare, right? It just fits so well. So I'm with you, Ashley, on this. I love lecture scenes in horror movies.
And thank you for the comments about It Follows. It's when we do kind of, like, the extra deep dives into, like, the meaning and analyzation, it's always good to hear that people appreciate it, especially on things like It Follows, The Green Knight, and stuff like that.
And even Possession. You know, I feel like, you know, the two discussions that we had in February about these movies, we, like, sort of, like, touched on things that are, like, beneath the surface of the horror movie, right?
Sure.
And that's kind of why Chris and I started this podcast to begin with. And sometimes we'll do deep dives on movies that, you know, are sort of, like, derpy. And those are fun, you know, but it's also really fun to sit with your friend and have a conversation.
Who doesn't like a derp dive?
I mean, I love a derp dive, but I also like to make my brain work and, yeah, like, talk and have a serious conversation. So I'm glad that people appreciate it. You know, like the comment from Ashley on It Follows and the comment from McKenna on Possession. Like, I'm really glad that these like episodes like spoke to y'all.
No, for real. And I love that our goofy episodes, like our listeners are great, you know, following us with, you know, following right along with us for the goofy stuff as well as like the deeper stuff.
That's right. For every comment we have about like talking about lecture scenes and like emotional like depth of divorce, we also have listeners calling in just to go, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, come on. We love it all. Yeah. But that was a good voicemail. Thank you, Ashley.
Speaking of our listeners, we have a new patron.
We do?
Yeah, this is Mark Landry, and I believe he's a Canadian.
This is our first Canadian patron?
I don't think so, but maybe.
Okay. Well, we've had a British one for sure.
Yeah, we've had a multinational
conglomerate.
Group of compatriots.
Compatriots.
Yeah. So thank you for joining the family, Mark. And I think it's also time for us to shout out patrons at the Film Flamer tier or higher.
That's right, at the Film Inferno level, our highest level, we have Kami Lestat,
Kimberly,
and Penelope.
At the Film Flamer tier, we have Anthony,
Ashley,
Ben,
Big Dave,
Glazed Donut,
Jessica,
Lisa,
Rosie Red Leader,
Nikki,
Sinistero,
Wallstrich,
and William Skinner. But especially all you guys.
Yeah, really. Kimberly, Lestat, Anthony, Ashley, Glazed Donut, Jessica, Nikki, Rosie Red Leader, like everyone that was like giving us comments.
That's right.
This was an excellent Shooting the Flames episode. I really enjoyed responding to all of that.
I am kind of sad to be leaving the comments and questions and voicemails behind to move into
horror news.
So The Terror is getting a season 3 greenlit at AMC based on the book Devil in Silver. Now, if you're not aware, The Terror season 1 was excellent. Absolutely must see. And I will watch it again. I will watch it however many times I have to. I really need you to see this. It's amazing.
I need to watch
and,
it.
And so that's based on them trying to find the Northwest Passage. A lot of great, amazing actors. And then season 2 was about the Japanese internment camps, which is also very good, but not just like amazing.
Yeah.
Right. Like the first one. And then so it's really fun to see that there's a season 3 being greenlit. And so this book is actually about like New Hyde Psychiatric Hospital. And Karen Kusama is going to be directing the first 2 episodes out of 6 and is also executive producing the series. So. Yes.
Oh, I love Karen Kusama.
This is big news.
Okay. All right. So, A, I have got to watch these seasons, especially the first one, because it seems like just about every Shooting the Flames episode, I'm reminded that I have not watched it yet. So, we're going to have to, like, pick out some time for you to watch it for the whatever time this is, and we'll watch it together.
Okay. Well, between everything else we want to watch, the Oscars, and Pride and Prejudice that we still haven't watched.
That's right. We totally missed the Super Bowl. So Chris and I were going to watch Pride and Prejudice, the A&E miniseries.
BBC.
BBC miniseries, instead of watching the Super Bowl because we're gay. And we didn't. We just let that slip right by. And I really want to watch that again. But I have never seen The Terror. And so I would very much like to. We may just have to have it a standing weekday, like so where good. We just show up and watch 2 episodes.
It's one of those TV shows or movies that just like reads like a novel or something like that. It's like such a page turner.
Well, I really enjoyed like all the prep work we did for our top 13 of The X-Files. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like showing up on a random Sunday to watch like 3 episodes of television was really fun. You know? Because I didn't have to binge it. Binging is where I falter with television. Like after like watching a couple episodes, I get really bored and then I never go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like if we like piece our way through it, by the time season 3 is completely finished, I will have finished the other 2 seasons. Although it doesn't seem like I have to watch that.
I just want you to see season 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all that's gotta happen.
I can do that. Also, this week, we were gifted the first images of Bill Skarsgård as the Crow. And this is the remake, reboot, whatever we want to call it. It's coming out to theaters in June.
Right. This is based off the Crow graphic novel that
right.
the movie was based on in the 90s, which Brandon Lee tragically died
right.
in. And then, of course, there's a whole slew of sequels, including David Boreanaz being in one. And this is supposed to be in theaters in June. And we've got a huge amount of trailers to show you that are coming out in like April, May, and June, but there's no trailer for this yet.
But the images look really good.
They do, and they make him seem very Abby.
Yeah. Well, he is kind of Abby.
Yeah, he's a Skarsgård, so.
So, I mean, it's in the bloodline, but I don't know. I had my doubts whenever they said that he was being cast in this particular role, and I'm like, okay, but every time I see him in something that's horror adjacent, like when he was cast as Pennywise, I was like, the fuck you say? And now I can't even picture, you know, like Tim Curry is kind of an afterthought, you know what I mean? And that's probably blasphemous to say, but I feel like he's really good in these roles and I shouldn't doubt him ever.
No, I didn't like his acting at first, and he couldn't do an American accent or anything like that back when he was on his early Netflix show with Famke Jensen and others, like where he was a vampire and Famke Jensen was his mother. And then there was a werewolf. I forget what that was called.
It was a terrible, terrible show.
It wasn't very good. And he wasn't very good in it.
No, that was awful. Everything
since then, he has gone crazy with his acting skills.
Yeah. I mean, I really, really dig him a lot. And like, I get excited when I see his name in things now. And so since I watched The Crow with you for the first time and it escaped me all my 40 years or whatever, I don't know. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Especially now with these images coming out.
Next up, director John Waters is about to start production on his first feature film for 20 years, titled Liar Mouth, which is based on a book he wrote with Aubrey Plaza as the lead.
I don't give a shit what this movie's about. I'm going to see it.
Of course.
I mean, Aubrey Plaza and John Waters seems like a fucking match made in heaven, and I'm here for it. Also, has it been 20 years since we've had a John Waters movie?
I guess so.
My God.
2004?
I love John Waters. I think like his movies are so subversive and just amazing. And I don't think people talk about them enough. I think that he's just a really good filmmaker. And I'm ready for this.
Okay.
Fully. Finally, M. Night Shyamalan's next movie, Trap, is bizarre, dark, and wild, says star Josh Hartnett. And this will be a big pivot for him as an actor.
So that just like intrigues me because I like Josh Hartnett. And he was that like kind of a heartthrob back in the 90s, of course. And he kind of started doing some interesting roles in like Sin City and bit parts. And then like he went on to do Penny Dreadful, which after like not acting for a long time. You know, which was amazing for him. He even did like a little bit of a gay bit in that. And so that was very interesting. And so he says this is an even bigger pivot. And it's very bizarre, dark, and wild for an M. Night Shyamalan movie. So I'm intrigued. And it's called Trap. And so, yeah.
And I think this has, I mean, it's supposed to take place at a concert.
I don't know. And it also stars Shyamalan's youngest daughter, maybe?
The same one who's making The Watchers.
No.
Oh, he has. Oh, no, my God.
Nepotism
all his children?
All happening.
Oh, God. Nepotism all through the Shyamalan world.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, so I had pretty much wrote off M. Night Shyamalan after a while, and then I watched The Visit, and it was a really, really good movie.
I still haven't seen that. I watched the one where everyone was like aging rapidly.
Old, right? Yeah,
which I thought was good.
Yeah. I thought that was good, too. Not as good as The Visit, but I also really enjoyed Knock at the Cabin.
And Devil was good, you know? And so it's like, really, people just shout on him after Lady in the Water, I think, you know? And
yeah. That was not a good movie.
And he's, if you look at his oeuvre, like, basically everything he's done has been good, except for a couple of things.
I mean, because I rewatched The Village, like, a year ago.
I love The Village.
And I thought it was really good.
My sister actually loves, it's one of her favorite movies, is Lady in the Water.
I know, and I...
That's kind of inexplicable to me. I don't really like that.
I've only seen it the one time, you know, so maybe I should watch it again. But, like, I'm down for M. Night Shyamalan, you know, and I'm ready to watch this movie, especially after Knock at the Cabin. That movie really surprised me. It made it into our top 10 of last year, you know, although it was a really beige year, you know, but like still. So bring on Trap. And I know that in our next segment, we're going to be talking about some more Shyamalan-ness.
You're here.
Coming soon.
First up, we've got Sting, which comes out to theaters in April, and this is about a giant fucking spider.
You're welcome.
And the little girl's named Charlotte.
Is it really?
Yes. I'm surprised you didn't catch that.
I did not catch that in the trailer.
Yeah, I clocked that right away.
What?
Yeah, she names some the little spider pig. Sting. Yeah. And then it grows up to be this massive thing. And then it can paralyze you and like crawl in your mouth. And they show all of that in the trailer. And it's fucking disgusting because I do not like spiders. And I certainly don't like spiders of unusual size.
That's so weird to me. I would feel you'd be more frightened of spiders of like a usual size.
No, like if I see a spider of a usual size, I will kill it. I more hate them, you know, unless yeah. they're just minding their business and I've got bugs or something and I'll let them alone, you know. But if there's a spider like facehugger sized or larger, like fuck that.
So you probably shouldn't be going to Australia.
No, I should not.
Australian sized spiders.
No.
I don't know. Okay,
if you can catch and eat a fucking bird as a spider, like, fuck you.
You're like, that spider is really big. What's it eating? A seagull? You're like, no, thank you. No. So this movie has been in the works for quite some time. They have been like talking about this movie forever. Fan posters have been made about it. It was supposed to be like the Arachnophobia remake or something for a while.
Which I've never seen because of obvious reasons.
I love Arachnophobia.
We should have a phobia double deep dive where you make me watch Arachnophobia and I make you one with like copious amounts of maggots or something.
Oh my God. I hate maggots or clowns. The two things. Just can't stand it. No, this movie seems like a cross between Arachnophobia and Eight-Legged Freaks, just a little bit.
Yeah, I did watch Eight-Legged Freaks. I enjoyed it.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Arachnophobia is fun, too. I don't have a spider phobia, though, like you and my brother, the two people I know.
No, see, like, once they get too large, that's when I think they're silly, right? It's, like, of a certain size. It's, like, poodle-sized spiders. That's when I'm just like, nope. It's like if it's as big as my hand or larger and then less than a Buick, that's the size, really.
The poodle's too big. What's shocking to me, though, is that this movie looks like it could possibly be really fucking fun and yeah. good.
Yes.
Like the things that this trailer sets up for this movie, like we already know the whole little like whistle background, like it's already got its hook
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
You know, it's already sunk its fangs in, you could possibly say.
It's very
say.
Popcorn horror, but it looks like it's kind of smart popcorn yeah. horror. So I like that.
I am here for this. I will totally watch this. And I like spider movies.
And kind of like Abigail, you know, it yeah. kind of has that vibe, which is like smart popcorn horror, you know?
Exactly. So like already. Ready. 2024 is looking way less beige and way more fun than 2023 was.
Ready or not.
And that may or may not be the case with this next trailer. And it's something that came out of Sundance and got the most buzz. I feel like everybody in the world was talking about I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah, and they keep describing this as a horror movie, but it kind of looks horror adjacent as far as this trailer is concerned. But they describe it as such, so I believe them. Yeah, I Saw the TV Glow. We're kind of expecting a little bit of it because it's been going the festival circuit, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of expecting it to show its face at the Overlook.
I hope so, because I really want to see this movie, although I also kind of don't. And here's why. Like, I didn't really know what this was about. You know what I mean? But every time that I saw someone talk about it online after Sundance, they kept throwing around Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I'm like, okay, that's very intriguing to me. Having seen the trailer now for this movie, I don't know why people are saying that, really.
Well, because they're mentioning that they grew up with a show called A Certain Thing, and it's where that group of kids teams up together like the Scoobies to kill a monster every week.
Okay.
Right. And so it's turning out that like it's getting a little meta and that maybe they were actually the show is real and they were in it, you know, or so there's some sort of reality mixing happening. I don't know, but it's alluding that some of those monsters are real, you know,
which
is things going on,
which is good. This is probably more horror adjacent than horror. This also looks very, very moody and very, very angsty in a way that only young adults can possibly be. And I am not a young adult anymore. And so like I fear that any connection to these characters I might have is probably lost.
We're also being told that it's like a masterpiece and everything, and that's a really hard word yeah. to throw around as far as expectation management. They're not doing it any favors.
Stop using those buzzwords. I feel like I used to be, anytime someone said this is the scariest thing, right? I'm like, oh my God, I have to see it. Or someone will call it a masterpiece. I'm like, oh my God, I have to see it. And then I saw Skinamarink and I'm like, I will never again trust those words from anybody who has seen a movie before myself. And also, the director of this movie made a movie called We're All Going to the World's Fair, or Let's All Go to the World's Fair, that got similar praise. And then I watched it And I immediately wanted to like just erase that time from my past.
It almost seems like one of the horror movies that were coming out of Sundance last year never really saw the light of day again. And it was Talk to Me that came out of the festival circuit.
Exactly. That was like,
so you never really run. Know yeah. what really survives the jump.
So we'll find out. I mean, like, there's a lot of buzz for this. And so I feel like people will go see it just solely based on the buzz. But obviously, we won't know until we watch the movie. But I really want to see this, and I really, really don't, which means I'm going to have to watch it. And
you may be forced to at the festival.
Only time will tell, because the Overlook has not announced their film lineup.
We'll see. Well, it could be their secret screening. So we may still not know.
That's true.
Remember, Talk to Me was their secret screening.
That's right. And that turned out to be really good.
Yeah, really.
So.
Yep. So if they do the same thing, then this is the equivalent, right? So
either way, we'll see the TV glow eventually.
Eventually, we'll see the TV glow.
All over us.
Smegma. Quiet Place, day one. All these trailers are great, actually. So this is in theaters in June. Looks like it's starring everyone that's been in it before, but also Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn. Joseph Quinn was in Stranger Things. And of course, recently, I think he was cast as the Human Torch in the new Fantastic Four movie.
Yes.
And Lupita Nyong'o, I love her.
Love.
And it looks like she is married to or is related to in the movie to the guy that was in the last movie, Quiet Place 2, when they get to the island or whatever with mm-hmm. Cillian Murphy. So I don't know how all this ties together, but it looks fucking great. And it looks much more like almost a disaster movie. Big scale, big budget.
Yes.
Compared to the first two.
And that's why I like it so much.
I am looking forward to this. Every single one of those so far has been good, if not a classic.
Yeah, I would say that A Quiet Place, the original, will be considered like a modern classic at some point.
Yeah, it's like they're not so good to be classics, but it's just like they're so good on the promise of being so high concept. They really executed on their high concept, right?
Exactly.
Which makes them kind of horror classic.
A Quiet Place really took a gimmick and ran with it and made it really, really good.
Well, they really doubled down on it with all the sign language, the legitness of it.
That's right. And the actors who were cast in those roles. And I feel like the sequel was also really good and enjoyable for different reasons.
I don't know if the same director, of course, the writer, director, actor, what's his face from The Office?
John Krasinski.
John Krasinski. I don't know if he's directing this.
And I don't know how much it has to do with the original family. I feel like they may have thrown those into the trailer just to give you some sort of like, or people who have not seen the movies before.
In the trailer list of cast, it listed their names.
Okay. All right. Well, good. I mean,
and Cillian Murphy. So, but I don't know if they're going to cross paths in the movie or not. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very intriguing. So I am looking forward to this. It looks very disastery, and I love a good disaster movie. And I really like an origin story. I love exposition. Yeah. So, I mean, like, bring it on.
Already. I hope that they're in it in some way. I don't know if it's going to be like anthology type of situation with like threads, you know, through time or something. But or if they were discrediting the actors that were in the trailer. I don't know.
I mean, we'll find out because I'm definitely going to watch this.
Yep.
Next up, we have a trailer for a movie called Watchers. This is coming to theaters in June. It is directed by Ishana Knight Shyamalan. So his daughter, apparently one of many nepotized daughters.
But this looks great.
This movie looks fucking amazing.
Yeah, this is one of the best trailers I've seen, for something. It looks super stylized and also very high concept. But if it turns into like the Smelderly to like Alien thing, then I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see.
I will never forgive the Smelderly for ruining Aliens for me.
We'll see.
But this movie looks really, really good. Dakota Fanning looks really, really good in this movie. I feel like it is, I don't know, it just seems like everything that I like. Like it's a very limited cast, a very small location, right?
Yeah.
So already it's working for that. And then there's something like intriguing about it. I really like this trailer because it builds up a world that you are automatically interested in and gives you a tiny glimpse of what these monsters might look like at the very, very end of it. It's been a long time since I have seen a trailer where I've just like been counting down the days now to like go and see this movie. Like I'm ready to watch this. I'm so intrigued by it. So the Shyamalan family apparently is like knocking me out of the park. Although it could end up being a total piece of shit.
I don't know.
I'm sure there's a twist.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a twist. When you can't see who's watching you.
Can you imagine what the Shyamalan Thanksgivings are like?
There's a built-in reveal to that. You know what I mean?
Like every Thanksgiving has to have a twist?
I don't know.
I guess Christmas is better as twists. the whole prison thing. Anyway, what's next?
Long Legs. So we already talked about this, so we don't have to talk about this briefly. This is a full trailer that was promised that we mentioned last shooting that was like the day before it was supposed to come out.
Right.
And this is in theaters in July. And this is, of course, starring Micah Monroe of It Follows fame, as well as Nicolas Cage from, you know, everything. And this shows a little bit more, but it's still kind of oblique. It's still kind of holding its cards close to the chest. Right. And so I don't know if I have much to say about this other than it's the marketing is super stylized around this. And I don't know if Oz Perkins can really pull this off, but the marketing is really kind of elevating this as some sort of like tentpole, almost trying to make it look like it's some sort of like David Fincher movie or something.
Yeah, it looks really weird. It's all very vague, you know, but like the marketing for this movie, like you said, has been spot on. They released like three really cool teasers without us even knowing what the movie is, and the internet was a buzz. And people sort of deduced that it was Long Legs because they knew this movie was coming.
And I'm starting to lose patience.
Honestly, you know, but at this point, I don't really want to know what the movie's about. Like, I'm going to watch it, you know.
You have me at Micah Monroe.
For real, though. And she looks great in this trailer.
And it might be her opening movie.
It could be. I mean, because, like, always.
At Overlook,
yeah. Because they always have something that's, like, kind of New Orleans-y, at least the last 2 years that we went. And Nicolas Cage is super New Orleans-y, and he opened last year's with Renfield. And I hope it is, because I really would like to see Long Legs. Like, I'm intrigued enough to watch it. I was intrigued with Micah Monroe, like you said. And I don't know, like, they've released these posters for the movie online, and the posters were intriguing. The thing is that Oz Perkins, his movies are good, but they're slogs, like we've talked about before. And I'm kind of weary about that, but we'll find out.
Yeah. Next up, we've got Twisters, which is our big summer blockbuster coming in July, where the tornado is our slasher. And it stars Nope's Brandon Pereira and Kiernan Shipka of Mad Men and Sabrina the Teenage Witch fame.
Yeah.
Those are the two that I recognized. There's more in here, but none of the original cast. Bill Paxton's dead. Helen Hunt looks like the Mask now. Who else?
That's
I don't know.
It.
Everyone's dead. Twisters looks kind of fine to me.
It does. I mean, like,
doesn't like the special effects of it don't actually look any better than the original to me. Like,
yeah. Like, I was expecting something masterful from this trailer, and it was a Super Bowl trailer, you know? And so was A Quiet Place Day One. But, like, I don't know. So this, out of all these trailers, this is the one that I watched before today, before recording. Yeah. And I was just like, okay, it's the same movie, essentially.
Yep.
You know, which is fine. And I love Twister. In fact, we're covering Twister this year.
We are. Is this our announcement?
Yeah. So,
We're doing Disaster. We're going to do a blockbuster disaster horror movie month. And so we are going to be covering Twister as well as Backdraft.
And maybe since we were talking about revisiting the hot takes format, perhaps we'll do Twisters and give you our thoughts on that or something.
May the fuck haps.
Because I doubt, like, I love Twister enough to go watch Twisters, you know?
Oh, yeah, sure, for sure, yeah. And I'd like, I was kind of disappointed with how widescreen it looks. I really want an IMAX looking thing for this, right? Because you really want vertical, focal, you know?
And I think it's supposed to be an IMAX movie, too.
Really?
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, it just looked like it was super anamorphic, like spaghetti string letterbox based on that trailer, but
I think it's just the trailer.
Like, yeah, we get like the Oklahoma as one big flat, you know, expanse, but like we need to see up, please.
And they have a whole Dorth thing going on too, right?
Dorth. Friends of Dorth. For our last trailer, we have kind of a Guardians of the Galaxy clone, but it's based on a video game franchise, and I don't know, maybe there was a graphic novel behind this at some point, called Borderlands. Right. And so many of you have probably played those games or seen those games or heard of them. And this is in theaters in August, and it has a stacked cast. I don't know how horror adjacent this is going to be, but it's going to be a little horror adjacent based on the monsters and shit we're seeing. And it's kind of Mad Max-y and sci-fi and Firefly-y Guardians of the Galaxy-ish. And it stars Kate Blanchett randomly, along with Kevin Hart, Jack Black as a little robot, and Jamie fucking Lee Curtis.
And If, I mean, horror adjacent aside, Jamie Lee Curtis would be enough for that, but it's also directed by Eli Roth.
Yes. So that's where the major credit is coming from, obviously.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. This is Eli Roth. He famously wanted to make a Borderlands movie based on that franchise.
He wrote the screenplay for this too.
Yes. So there's a lot of passion in this and, you know, good director, good actors. He obviously attracted a lot of talent. Obviously, him and Cate Blanchett work well together because she was in his previous film about something about clocks and walls or something.
I never watched that movie.
Me either.
Looked like the House with the Clock and its Walls.
And Jack Black was in that too, right?
He was.
Starring with Cate Blanchett.
That's right. Nepotism.
I liked it when he made movies about flesh-eating diseases.
Or like...
Well, I guess there's a lot of that in Borderlands, actually.
Probably.
Now that I remember playing it.
I don't know. I love Eli Roth movies. You know, the only reason I didn't watch the House with the Clock on its Walls is because I really don't like family-oriented movies. And it just seemed a little bit like that. Even when they're dark. Like, I'm not really into like animation or like...
Beethoven's Second or something.
Yeah. I don't want to watch Air Bud. You know what I mean? And so I just don't care. That's why I've never seen Monster House, although I hear it's amazing.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. This movie looks fun. It looks very un-Eli
Rothy. The trailer was super fun, yeah.
But I was shocked at how much it reminded me of Guardians of the Galaxy. In fact, after we finished the trailer and you were like, well, that's very much Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was like, you took the words right out of my fucking mouth.
And Suicide Squad. But if you go back to the new Suicide Squad by the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy, it's fantastic. Like, you still need to see that. Not Suicide Squad. I think it's the Suicide Squad.
Right.
The new one. Yeah. And like, this felt like his movie. Not Eli Roth's, but if Eli Roth is going to, like, he's going to probably bait people in there and it's going to be a lot more horrific than people think.
And I hope so.
Borderlands has a lot of that stuff in it.
So. I love it. Good then. I mean, and also I hope this is Eli Roth's, like, most money-making thing and he can take this and just make whatever fucking movies he wants to make afterward.
Yeah, he's had kind of a dearth. He's been, like, relegated to the talking head status on Shudder.
Well, until like Thanksgiving, you know?
Yeah, but, yeah,
like,
Thanksgiving was great.
So I mean, I'm hoping he's having some sort of resurgence. And Thanksgiving made some money, but this is going to make a lot more. And honestly, you have me at Cate Blanchett. So
Jamie Lee Curtis.
And Jamie Lee Curtis. But Cate Blanchett looks really good in this. She looks amazing in this.
She should be in more genre.
I agree.
Not that she's had a lack of genre, really, if you look at her career.
No, I mean, The Gift alone, come on, is enough.
The Gift alone. That. Lord of the Rings, Galadriel, gaze into the Palantir.
Oh, I miss the Palantir. Well, I think that just about wraps up our Shooting the Flames episode for March, and it was jam-packed. As always, we would like more comments, questions, and voicemails. If you want to leave us some comments, follow us on social media at The Film Flamers on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, whatever they're called these days. We're there.
You can email us at tiredqueens@filmflamers.com or call our hotline at 972-666-7733.
Keep watching my Badlands.
Keep watching us, our engaging intercourse.
Thrust yourself into my crow.
Give this podcast a fair stroke.
I will sting you. Fair stroke. It really was quite the entendre of a review. Like we mentioned earlier, we're covering Cargo this month, a first watch for both of us. But before that, we are continuing down the George Romero zombie path by talking about a remake of his film, 1990s remake of Night of the Living Dead. And like we mentioned, we have a new patron. If you also want to be a new patron, head over to patreon.com/thefilmflamers to join the family. We'll read your name on the next Shooting the Flames. And you can get all of our bonus content, and I'm fairly certain we'll probably have some sort of zombie movie poll for you guys to vote in this month.
Well, Robert.
Yes, Chris.
I think it's time for me to thrust my audience into a really engaging intercourse and have some
sweet dreams. Thrust.